Chapter 9. The U.S. Director of National Intelligence sat quietly through his weekly staff briefing on Eurasian and Middle Eastern affairs. A taciturn retired Army general named Braxton, he was the president's chief intelligence funnel for the Defense Department, Homeland Security, the CIA, and a dozen other agencies responsible for protecting the nation's security. The briefing was dominated by the usual field updates of events taking place in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, and Iran. A parade of intelligence officers and Pentagon officials marched in and out of the secure conference room at the Liberty Crossing Intelligence Campus, the recently constructed home of the DNI located in McLean, Virginia. The briefing was on its third hour before the agenda turned to Israel. John O'Quinn, a deputy national intelligence officer for Western Asia, slipped away from the mammoth conference table to refill his coffee cup as a CIA intelligence officer discussed the latest developments on the West Bank. All right, there's nothing new there, Braxton interrupted impatiently. Let's move on to the rest of the med. What's the latest on the Al-Azhar mosque bombing in Cairo? O'Quinn hurried back to the table as the CIA officer fielded the question. The final death toll was only 7, as the blast occurred at a time of sparse attendance. We don't know if that was intentional or not. There was a single explosion which severely damaged the mosque's main prayer hall. As you know, Al-Azhar is considered the state mosque of Egypt and is also one of the oldest and most revered sites in Islam. The public outrage has been intense, with several anti-Israel marches taking place throughout the streets of Cairo. We are quite sure that the protests are being organized by the Muslim Brotherhood. Does Cairo know who is responsible for the bombing? They don't, the CIA man replied. No one with any credibility has taken responsibility, which isn't surprising given the nature of the attack. Our fear is that the Muslim Brotherhood will gain renewed traction from the attack to make further inroads into the Egyptian parliament. That's all we need is for the Egyptians to go fundamentalist on us, Braxton muttered with a shake of his head. What's our intelligence assessment as to who pulled it off?
We really don't know, sir. We're looking at potential Al-Qaeda connections, but have nothing firm at the moment. There's a somewhat curious detail from the Egyptian National Police, and that is that they claim to have found some residue samples of HMX from the blast site.
The meaning being?
HMX is a tightly controlled plastic explosive. It's high-end stuff, mostly used for nuclear devices and rocket propellant. It's not something we'd normally associate with Al-Qaeda, and we find it a bit odd that it surfaced in Egypt.
Sitting in an adjacent chair, O'Quinn felt the hair on the back of his neck rise. He quickly cleared his throat.
"You sure it was HMX?" he asked.
We're awaiting our own test samples, but that's what the Egyptians reported.
That means something to you, Quinn? General Braxton asked.
The intelligence officer nodded.
Sir, there was a planted bomb explosion at the Yeşil Mosque in Bursa, Turkey, 3 days before the Al-Azhar blast. You may have seen a field brief on it. 3 fatalities, including a prominent leader in the fringe Felicity political party. Like in Egypt, it was an old, venerated mosque.
He took a quick sip of his coffee, then added,
"The Turkish authorities have confirmed that the blast was caused by a planted parcel of HMX explosives."
"So we have 2 planted bombs in 2 countries 3 days apart," the general stated. "Both in historic mosques, both ostensibly with a low designated kill rate, and both ostensibly using the same explosive material."
"All right, then somebody please tell me who and why."
An uneasy silence filled the room before O'Quinn finally braved to speak.
"Sir, I don't think anyone was aware of the similarities in explosives until just now."
The CIA man agreed.
"We'll get some analysts to search for a possible link right away. Given the nature of the explosives, I might speculate that the Iranians have some involvement."
"What do the Turks think?" Braxton asked.
"Like Egypt, there have been no claims of responsibility. We have had no indication that the Turks have identified any suspects."
The general began fidgeting in his seat, his cobalt blue eyes boring into O'Quinn like a pair of drill bits.
O'Quinn had worked for the general for less than a year, but had slowly gained his professional respect. He could tell by his demeanor that the director wanted more, and finally he asked for it. "What is your assessment?" the general asked gruffly. O'Quinn's mind churned to expel a coherent reply, but he had more questions than answers.
"Sir, I can't formulate the Egyptian blast, but as far as the Bursa Mosque bombing, some believe there may be a link to the recent artifact thefts at Topkapi Palace in Istanbul."
"Yes, I read about that," the general replied. "I understand a congresswoman was somehow involved in the incident."
"Lauren Smith of Colorado. She recovered a portion of the stolen artifacts, but was nearly killed in the process. She somehow managed to keep her name out of the papers."
"Sounds like someone I could use on my staff," Braxton muttered.
"I believe some sort of explosives were used during the Topkapi break-in," O'Quinn continued. "I will make an immediate inquiry to determine if there is a match to the Bursa and Cairo bombings."
"What would be the motive?"
"The typical incidences of mosque bombings, as we've seen in Iraq, are Shia attacks on Sunni mosques, or vice versa," offered the CIA officer. "Though in the case of Turkey, I believe the Shia Muslims in the country are a non-violent minority."
"That's correct," O'Quinn stated. "A more likely culprit would be Kurdish separatists. Turkey is holding national elections in less than 4 weeks. It's possible that the Turkish attacks were instigated by the Kurds, or another fringe political party trying to stir up trouble, though I'm not sure that would explain a link to Cairo."
"I would think the Turkish authorities would have been quick to publicly blame the Kurds if they thought they were actually behind the attacks," Braxton said.
"You're probably right," O'Quinn replied, flipping through his briefing notes. His fingers stopped at a copy of the NSA intercept transcript recorded by George Withers.
"Sir, there's another development on the Turkish front that may be cause for alarm."
"Go ahead," the general said.
Altan Batal, the Muslim Mufti of Istanbul and a leading fundamentalist cleric in Turkey, will be entering the upcoming presidential election, according to an NSA call intercept.
"President Yılmaz has had a stable leadership run for several years," Braxton noted, "and Turkey is strongly secular. I can't imagine that this Batal fellow represents more than a marginal candidacy."
"I'm afraid that's not the case," O'Quinn replied. "President Yılmaz's popularity has waned considerably due to the poor state of the economy, and he's been stung by recent corruption charges within his administration. Mufti Batal, on the other hand, has become a rising public figure in the country, particularly with the poor and unemployed. There's no telling how he'll perform as a political candidate, but many fear he could represent a legitimate challenge to the incumbent."
"Tell me more about this Batal," the general asked.
"Well, sir, his claimed bio states that he was orphaned at an early age and forced to fight for survival in the ghetto slums of West Istanbul. He escaped a life of poverty when he came to the aid of an old man being robbed by a neighborhood thug. In gratitude, the man, a mosque elder, sent Batal to a private Muslim school where he paid the boy's room and board well into his teens. The school was heavily fundamentalist, which apparently drives his views today. He has a heavy scholarly bent, yet also a gift for oration, which helped accelerate his rise through Istanbul's Muslim hierarchy. He now stands as the chief theologian for all of Istanbul. Though personally charming, his writings and sermons espouse Taliban-like interpretations of Islam, with plenty of rallying about the evils of the West and the dangers of foreign influence. There's no telling what would happen if he was elected, but we'd have to face the real possibility of losing Turkey overnight."
"Does he have a chance to win the election?" Braxton asked, with rising dread in his voice. O'Quinn nodded.
"Our assessment is that he could have a real shot at it. And if the Turkish military should sustain his election, then all bets are off."
An Air Force colonel seated at the table gasped. "A fundamentalist takeover of Turkey? That would be an unmitigated disaster. Turkey is a NATO country and one of our strongest allies in the region. We have a variety of military resources in the country, including tactical nuclear weapons. The Air Force base at Incirlik is critical for our operations in Afghanistan. Not to mention the listening posts on their soil we use to monitor the Russians and the Iranians, added the CIA man. Turkey is currently a key transfer point for supplies into Afghanistan, as they were for Iraq, grieved an army major seated beside the colonel. Loss of those supply lines would jeopardize our entire Afghan campaign. We foresee all kinds of potentially disastrous scenarios, O'Quinn added quietly, from a closure of the Bosphorus and its flow of Russian oil and gas to an emboldened Iran. The entire Middle East would be affected, and the impact of such a change on the balance of power is nearly impossible to predict. Turkey has been a quiet friend and trading partner of Israel, exporting large quantities of food and fresh water, among other things, the CIA officer said. If Turkey and Egypt were both to make a turn toward fundamentalism, it would heighten Israel's isolation. In addition to emboldening Iran, I would fear a greater aggression from Hamas, Hezbollah, and other frontline adversaries of Israel, which would only lead to greater violence in the region. Such a turnabout in ruling power could, in fact, become the trigger point that we have long feared, the one that sparks World War III from the heart of the Middle East. The room fell silent as Braxton and the others digested the words with quiet dread. The general finally shook off the uneasy tension and barked a stream of orders. O'Quinn, I want a full report on this Mufti Batal on my desk first thing in the morning. I'll also need an executive summary for the presidential daily brief. We'll reconvene here Friday, where I expect a full assessment from both state and CIA. Assign whatever resources are necessary, he added with clenched teeth. But don't let this get ahead of us. He slammed his briefing book shut, then glared at the CIA man. World War III, he hissed. Not on my watch.